Powered by Rev Media in partnership with TSN, it is Season 5, Episode 48 of the Rain Dregs Hockey Podcast, presented by our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, who've introduced the first release of the Canadian Club Invitation Series, CC 15-Year-Old Cask. All the hallmarks of classic Canadian Club, with the added richness and sweetness of sherry. And as everyone can hear, Ray, this is now my second wave of being sick. I thought I was over it last week. Evidently not. So now I sound like a 13-year-old going through puberty. So episode 48 is going to be lots of cracking and snorting and coughing.
So what's the deal there?
Is it, I don't know.
Have you gone to the doctor yet?
No. I'm going to power through it. You know, so here's the weird thing. You know, tomorrow being Wednesday, it'll be 2 full weeks. So leading up to the trade deadline by last Wednesday, I thought, you know what? I'm coming out of this thing. Felt not too bad. Thursday felt about 70%. Friday, deadline day, 80%. Away we go. You know, you cough a little bit. You're getting all the excess leftover shrapnel out of you. So I don't know if it was like post-deadline where you don't have anything to think about anymore. So you just give up, right?
And 100% you do.
Yeah.
Like, adrenaline's over.
Yeah. Sunday, man, it was like, because I felt pretty good. I felt, I got a bad cold. It'll all be fine. Sunday and yesterday, still felt now, okay, just tired. And
you must have sound some, like crap. You must have some farmer's remedy for that. Like, are you sucking on honey or
no?
Like the farmers always the stuff that we laugh at that they used to say, it works. It's like 60 years old or 70 years old, and where you've got to have something in the Draeger family tree of that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, years ago it used to be like mustard plaster, so you'd get like a hot mustard on your chest. Have you ever had that or on your back?
No, that sounds terrible.
It was if the mix wasn't right, you had a problem because it literally would burn your skin, right? So it was kind of a last resort remedy. And this is probably because my parents were too cheap to go out and buy a little tub of Vicks, you know, and just rub it on your chest. It's same thing, only way different. We'll see how it all plays out. But, you know, Carlo Koliakovo gave me a tip, and obviously it hasn't worked.
But, I was going to say, are you nervous taking a tip from him?
Well, you probably heard of it. I'm sure Cammy uses it. It's called Fiery Ginger. It's a shot of this ginger juice with something else, and it's an immune system boost, right? So you're supposed to do this. I guess you're probably supposed to do it every day of your life. I don't know. He just suggested I start taking this like 10 days ago, and it's just like fire water, you know, going down. And it's supposed to work. It's supposed to clear your throat. And
have you started yet?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I've been taking it every day for a week. So I'm probably not the strongest endorser of this
product.
Well,
you should probably, maybe you could mix it with some CC and that'll help.
Ooh, there we go. Yes. At this stage of whatever I've got, I'm willing to try just about anything. You know, post-trade deadline, Ray, I always worry about the next 2, 3, maybe even 4 podcasts. So a couple of weeks, right? Because you're in that lull. You're through the February blahs, but, you know, now you're in a mail-it-in March, which some teams go through as well, you know, trying to push to the playoffs, and those who know that they're not making the playoffs. But as we get into headlines, this week, at least to start this week, through the weekend, man, we had all sorts of good things to sink our teeth into. So I'm curious to hear. We'll start with the New York Rangers in just a moment, but I've got to give full credit to Tim Hortons. We've got the roll-up to win. It's back with huge prizes, Ray, to celebrate the 60th anniversary of Tim Hortons. Guess who revealed 60 rolls, 60 rolls during the contest period are eligible for a chance to win a 60th roll reveal prize. Now, to get a look, check out all of the prizes and details, log on, go to rolluptowin.ca. But, I mean, the prize list for this is off the scale. So this is one of the best ever by Tim Horton. So check it out, rolluptowin.ca. So Matt Rempe, who we've probably talked too much about, You know, in three or four episodes to this point in his career, and I mean that respectfully, given he's played, what, 10 games in the NHL, something right. along those lines. All right. Well, the reason we have to talk about him, he gets the major for elbowing to the head of Jonas Siegenthaler. So that was yesterday, Monday night. Now go back to February 22nd, where Rempe was given a match penalty for the illegal check to the head of Devils forward Nathan Bastian. So I don't know if it's something about the New Jersey Devils. I'm being facetious. Obviously it isn't, because this kid has been involved in just about everything to this point. An enormous human being, but let's start first with a major for the elbow to the head Monday night. No doubt that's supplemental discipline all day long. What are we in a 3-4, maybe 5 game range? What do you think?
Given, like, I don't know what the likelihood of getting a match penalty in a discussion with player safety and then 3 weeks later getting a play like this.
Yeah.
Like, what's the likelihood that those two plays happen together? So clearly what happened the first time didn't resonate.
Mm-hmm.
The elbow yesterday, there are times in a game a guy goes to make a hit, and on the way he knows that he's mistimed it. And he makes some other adjustment because that's what you do. Rempe mistimed the hit, and he stuck his elbow out, hit Siegenthaler in the face.
Yeah.
Like, to me, this is an in-person hearing.
Okay.
And the reason is because it shows no regard for the fact that he just had a match penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the league doesn't crack down on it, why would he stop?
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. And now I know Curtis McDermott was brought over in a trade with with Colorado, and he challenged Rempe early, didn't fight, and Rempe shouldn't have fought.
Yeah.
Early.
Yeah.
We should have told him to beat it, and he did. But after the fight, or after the hit, he doesn't want to fight McDermott either, and so that's fine too.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't think it's the right thing to do, but that's fine too. But as he's waving bye-bye to the Devils on the way out, the only thing I can think of is there's only one, and I hate that I think this, but there's only one way to stop it, and that's to go to the Rangers,
yeah,
and tell them, you, if Rempe doesn't stop running around, you're going to get it.
Yeah.
And the three guys you're talking to are not tough guys.
Yeah.
They're the top end of the roster. Like, that has to stop.
Yeah.
Because, look, I met Matt Rempe. I thought he's an amazing kid. Like, honestly, like, the joy he had to be called up into the NHL was palatable. Like, he was just vibrating. And I hope he learns. But you know what's going to happen? He's going to play himself out of the league.
Yeah.
Because how the hell can you put him on the ice? If you're in a playoff game, and you're Peter Laviolette, you're going to put him on the ice. What if he does that in a 2-2 game midway through the first period? Well, a 0-0 game midway through the first period. He makes a play like that. You get a 5-minute major. The other team scores 3 power play goals.
It's over.
It's over. Yeah. And so he's going to have to learn. You know what? He should probably reach out to Zdeno Chara and say, hey, you were 6'9". How come you never hit anybody in the head?
Yeah.
What were you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I can think of very few, almost none incidents with Chara over the course of his career. The guy's 6'9".
Yeah. Yeah. And look, the way that Rempe plays, this aside, you know, he's always going to straddle the line because that's part of his game. So if I'm hearing you correctly, and, you know, he's so fresh in his career, send the message if you're the Department of Player Safety now. Right? Whether that's 4 or 5 games, but then let's, as a fan base, media base, give this kid the benefit of the doubt, right? Okay, enough of the nonsense. You're going to get slapped by the Department of Player Safety, and then enough. If you're getting suspended moving forward, and chances are he will be because of the style of hockey he chooses to play, at least keep it within the world of the hockey realm, if that makes sense. A hockey play. An elbow to the head like that, that's not a hockey play.
Like, I'm almost, there's so much around him already, and he's becoming a little bit of a cult hero.
Yeah.
in New York.
And yeah,
I was talking to my brother-in-law, Tony Granato, about it. And he said he remembers when Rudy Poshchek was playing for the Rangers. And the, Rudy would be sitting on the bench and the crowd was chanting his name. And he's like, Rudy, and when Rudy, and he said he'd be so wound up. And, you know, and so the same thing happens. Like the kids at the Garden, and it's a crazy wild place. And I get the emotion, but
yeah,
if he wants to stay in the league, you got to stay on the ice.
Yeah.
Find another way to do what you do, because he can be effective. I'll tell you, I'd be terrified of the guy.
Oh.
If I were playing, I'd be terrified of him.
Well, because, routine body check is potentially devastating, yes, just given his mass. You know,
that's the point. Is
yeah,
if he just runs into you,
yeah,
like he's 250 pounds. like I use this example in a game. Just imagine 250 pounds. Like, first of all, you've got to imagine it.
Yeah,
250 pounds, what that is, and then move it along at 15 to 20 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And run in and have it run into you.
Yeah.
What do you think that feels like?
I don't know, but we got to find out. Like, there's obviously mathematics and physics that can be applied here to give you the amount of poundage that would be transferred from one body to another. 250 pounds moving at 20 miles per hour.
Like, that's what is the force of
number?
That?
It would be a lot. It would be a lot. We'll find out. You know, Ryan Rashog seems like a math wizard. I wonder if he could figure it out for us. We'll find out on the
podcast. Well, I'd say he's probably got time, but you know, maybe he's out having a coffee with Randine right now. And, you know, like,
he's listening in for those who are watching on the YouTube channel or listening to the podcast. Ryan always checks in. Speaking of wires touching, how about John Tortorella, right? $50,000 fine, suspended 2 games for a dispute with Wes McCauley on Saturday. And what elevated it to beyond a game misconduct, getting kicked off the bench, which we see of, you know, we see coaches, happens, just happened to Sheldon Keefe not that long ago, was the fact that Torts militantly would not leave that bench. He's like, no, I'm not leaving. Eh. I mean, it was easy to read lips. He wasn't saying it as politely as that, but that's what elevated this thing to a suspension.
Sure.
And the 50K, right?
Yeah. And the fact that at the other end of the rope was also one of the most stubborn guys around in Wes McCauley. So you've got these two bulls that are pulling on the rope. And at the time, you're so involved in it that you don't see it, but clearly he's going to lose, like John.
Yeah.
Like Torts is going to lose. The game's going to continue with him gone. It's just a matter of getting him out of there.
Yeah.
And so it was, I know he doesn't like, he says he doesn't like to be the entertainment portion of the game, but damn, it was funny to watch. I just saw a stat. You know, you remember the old Baseball Manager, Earl Weaver?
Oh, yeah.
He was ejected 161 times in his career. So a baseball season's 162 games. So basically, he sat in the clubhouse for an entire season. Like, that's amazing. Amazing. And if you want to amuse yourself, just go down the rabbit hole and just punch in Earl Weaver ejections.
Yeah.
There's a couple that are just gold.
Yeah.
Gold.
Well, this was
so Torts is 50K lighter.
Yeah. Well, the Philadelphia Flyers are, because I think, you know, an executive with the Flyers not named Keith Jones or Danny Briere said, don't, whatever the fine is, we'll pay it. All right.
Yeah. Well, okay. Torts also doesn't get paid for the 2 games he's suspended. So,
and in his case, that's expensive 2 games.
That's right. Yeah.
That wild and wacky weekend, generally speaking, I would say. And no pun intended, how about Wild coach John Hines, right? He pulls his goalie in overtime.
Right.
I mean, I'd forgotten about this rule. I mean, it's risky given the fact that you're forfeiting that single point if you lose. And in this case, they won. They beat Nashville 4-3 in overtime. But you identified the play, and I'm like, you know, I saw that they pulled the goalie, but I forgot the fact that you lose that single point if you lose. That to me is a rule that should be changed. Get rid of that. I want to see that. What's wrong with pulling the goalie in overtime? I mean, it was a spectacle. It's a high-risk play. I thought it was tremendous.
Yeah, I've not really understood why you can't pull the goalie. Like, I don't get the theory behind that. Like, if somebody wants to pull the goalie, it's up to you. Why not? Like, you can do it in the rate. You can do it in, like, if you feel like it, if it's 4-4 with 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
You could do it in regulation time. I mean, it wouldn't be advisable, but you could do it. The cool part or the funny part, I think, to me is, so they pull the goalie, they win. They're talking to the players after. Matt Boldy says, I had no idea we lost the extra point.
Yeah.
Like, the guys don't know the rule. Because it never happens.
No.
Well, it never happens. I think it's, and they're in a position where you might as well.
Yeah.
If you're gonna get back close to the race, you need every scratchy, scroungy point you can get.
Yeah.
And they pulled another one out.
But that would be a coaching gut instinct, right? Like, would you have that conversation as a coaching staff? Like, maybe not prior to that game, but prior to a game in the preseason, whatever. You're like, hey, if we're ever in this situation, should we pull our goalie? Do you think that coaches would talk about that prior to?
I do. Dregs, just think, how many times have you been, you're going to the GM's meetings next week, right? Yeah. How often do you get in a conversation where guys are just spitballing stuff anyway?
Yeah.
Hey, what about if this happened? And what about if that happened? Yeah. Of course they do. They discuss it. When you think of it, if you've got possession in the zone and you drop a fourth guy out there, here's the thing. Chances are you've got guys on the other team that never kill penalties.
Right.
Now you've got a power play. They don't know where the hell to go. They got no idea. If I was out there, like, I never, ever, ever killed penalties. The only thing I did when we had a penalty was serve the too many men on the ice penalty. I'd go sit over there because I had my own water bottle. I talked to the guys. I liked it over there. I'm never going to kill penalties anyway. But I wouldn't know where to go. Four on three? No idea. So I think it's a great move. Really, it's gutsy, sure, but I like it.
I'm going to ask the question at the GM's meetings. I am, of Coley Campbell or whoever, because look, I mean, you worried that you're going to make 3-on-3 more gimmicky than what it actually already is? Like, guys want to pull the goalies, isn't it about entertainment? And ended up being a goal, so heck of a strategy. Your thoughts on the Winnipeg Jets? This is a team that you wanted to talk about today in headlines. So not just because, I mean, an impressive win over the Washington Capitals last night, 3-0, another shutout for Hellebuck. Tyler Toffoli was +2 in that game. You like the look of that line, whether it stays together or not. It started with Monahan and Iafallo, and Toffoli looked pretty good.
Well, it did. And the one thing I look at when you look at a player coming in, of course, is like, where's he going to play? And, you know, if it's a notable player like Toffoli, you're like, geez, I wonder where he's going to fit. And the one thing that the coaches love is it gives them a little bit of flexibility, right? Like, if that line, like if Monahan and Toffoli and Iafallo don't work, well, then you can flip a player here and there. Now you've got some legitimate options. I look at the Jets and I'm like, that is a really, really deep team. And so aside from the skaters they had in the lineup, they, you know, Gabe Vilardi was a scratch.
Yeah.
Kupari's hurt. Or the other way around.
Yeah, like, no, Vilardi's hurt. Yeah.
Vilardi's hurt. Yeah. Kupari was a scratch. Yeah. And Nate Schmidt was a scratch.
Yeah.
So now you've got three legit NHL players as your depth. Like, that's a really good team. They're one of half a dozen teams in the West.
Yeah,
that you would have to take note of. That is going to be a bloodbath coming out of the first round there. Like, there's legit teams that are not going to make it and out of that first round, and their fan bases and their management are going to go, you know, like, what a disappointment. But it's the old story. You can do everything right And sometimes it's not enough.
Yeah. And how about the example of how hard it is to play in the National Hockey League? You've got Cole Perfetti, 10th overall, yep. who, look, I mean, the Winnipeg Jets are deeply invested in the future of Cole Perfetti and vice versa. But this kid is struggling to stay in the lineup. And a part of why they went and acquired Tyler Toffoli is because you've got a veteran coach in Rick Bowness who wants to make sure that his top nine is loaded and ready, and that fourth line needs to be able to play as well. So nothing wrong with adversity, right, Ray? Like Cole Perfetti is going to have to fight his way to stay in on this lineup.
Yeah, nothing wrong with it, but we're sitting here. He probably hates it. And where he's sitting in the, you know, trying to claw his way back. The simple fact is you get to this time of the year, if the coach doesn't trust you on the ice to play you more minutes, you're going to get less minutes. It's a pretty simple formula. The problem is once your minutes get reduced, it's tough to climb back up. And all he can do is, like any other player in that boat, is you do your work in practice, you do some extra work, you'll be ready. And when your shift comes, you try and make an impact on the shift. Mm. And the impact is play the way the coach needs you to play.
Yeah.
That's how you get back on the ice.
Now, great kid. He'll find a way. Hit a post on a nice setup Monday night. Like, it's one of those things, right? When it's not going, it's just not going.
Yeah. And next year he's going to hit the post and it's going to go in.
Just the way it is. All right. Another Canadian team, the Vancouver Canucks. And I mean, Thatcher Demko injured. You know, what is it, a 2-3 week, maybe as long as a month, just given the circumstance, you want to make sure, look like a knee-related issue. So they're certainly not going to rush Thatcher Demko back into the mix here, given the time he needs to get healthy for the end of the season push in the playoffs. But, ooh, I mean, you could tell every layer of that organization was nervous, you know, as we watched Thatcher Demko leave.
One of the best in the game, right? Having a Vezina Trophy season. There's very few goalies that make this type of impact on their team. And if you pull any one of those guys out of their lineup, all of a sudden it's a completely different ball game. And that's where Vancouver is with Demko. They went in the offseason. They made that trade. Tanner Pearson went to Montreal and they got Casey DeSmith. And you know, because they wanted a veteran to be there.
Yeah.
And he hasn't played a lot. Last year, he played 38 games for Pittsburgh, and he's going to have to run the next month here. The fortunate part for Vancouver, the next 8 games are at home.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy circumstance, 9 straight home games. So that's wild. However, the games are spaced out. They play tomorrow against Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Wednesday, Colorado. Saturday, Washington, Tuesday, Buffalo. So in a week, you've got the game spaced out and DeSmith can play them all. And he's an NHL goalie. He's got to be adequate. Like, right? He's got to be average. Like, he's got to be at the league average. Yeah. And if he does that, they're going to be fine. He's not going to be Demko because it's really unfair, but watching Demko this year makes you realize how much better he is than everybody else. Like when DeSmith goes in, it's a different game because it's just a different game. Like there's not 5 goalies in the league that are having seasons like Demko.
No.
Like it's just, he's had an amazing year. DeSmith came in the other night. He had 10 shots, stopped them all, and they'll get Colorado on a back-to-back. Colorado's in Calgary on Saturday. Or on Tuesday. So we get Colorado on a back-to-back. Maybe it'll be both backup goalies.
Yeah, maybe.
And, you know, but the Avs are starting to feel pretty good about themselves too.
Yeah. Well, since we're just touching on Colorado, what do you make of the Landeskog story, right? I mean, it's a good one provided, I mean, Gabe Landeskog's a good dude. So you hope for the best for him. He's been through just nonsense.
Brutal.
The knee cartilage transplant, like transplant, hasn't played since the 2022 Stanley Cup Final. He's making strides, and Jared Bednar will tell anybody the hope, the expectation is he'll be ready for the playoffs. And I mean, that's such a terrific hockey story if that's what happens. But then he also has to be able to play at that level and play at the level right. that he was playing at prior to having to go through this.
Well, I don't think that's possible.
No,
he's probably not. He's not going to play at the level that he did when he literally left it all out on the line when they won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Right. Because that's the last game he played.
It is. Yeah.
And to come back after this long would be hard enough. What I'm most curious about, and the answer is nobody will know, is let's say he, you know, he's ramping up his rehab, he's ramping up his skating, and he's been cleared to take contact, and he takes contact, and then he's flying, and you get to May 1st, and he's, you know, he's cleared every hurdle he can clear. How would you know everything's going to hold up?
Oof.
And the answer is you don't, and you can only hope for him.
Yeah.
That it's okay, but just, you know, having him stride out on the ice would be an enormous boost.
Oh, yeah.
I would think they're talking more like the second round.
Sounds
even
like,
yeah, you know, and I'm like, God, how's he going to do that? I know how I feel, or I felt, after a summer away.
Yeah.
And then you'd start in preseason, and it was like you had two left feet and your gloves on the wrong hand. And like, it would be an enormous challenge. They have said they will not even come close to rushing him back.
No,
he'll either be fully cleared or it's just not going to happen.
All right. Final word on your former team, the New York Islanders. So their 6-game winning streak is snapped at the hands of Los Angeles Kings, 3-0 on Monday night, but still a very impressive run by the Islanders. They're cleanly in a fight for a wild card spot. And, you know, it feels like the credit for how this team has clawed their way back starts with Lou Lamoriello and making the decision that he made at the time. Look, this isn't about Lane Lambert. It isn't. But that was a tough call by Lou Lamoriello to say, I got to do something here. You know, there isn't a trade out there that is going to make this team better. I don't like what I'm seeing. I don't like what I'm hearing. I'm going to fire my coach. I'm going to bring in an iconic name in Patrick Waugh.
I ran into Waugh. We got a few minutes with him in the Stadium Series game. And it really struck me how different he sounded. A little more, not less passionate. Certainly not that, but more like just, I don't know, I'll say grateful, but more like just happy to be back. I think he was justifiably concerned that he wasn't going to get another chance. So he's back. His team plays the way he is, and that's aggressive.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's a fiery competitor, yet there's a different tone to him. The Islanders are... They've played, I mean, you win 6 straight games, you got to be doing something right. But he's made a couple of tweaks to the lineup. So one thing I was really interested in is he's got Barzal, Nelson, and Horvat together. They're 3 best offensive players. And like, he wants to go. He's going to ride those guys 20 plus minutes a night. They got a great goaltender in Sorokin. They lose last night, which back-to-back night and probably a predictable loss for them, but there they are. They're tied with Detroit. They're 2 points behind Philly with a game in hand. They, like a couple other teams, they can look at their record. They've got 14 overtime or shootout losses. 14. What, you know, they've blown a multitude of third period leads.
Yeah.
Like, what if you had a third of those back?
Yeah.
You're not
in a playoff lock.
Yeah, it's crazy how fine the line is. But the Islanders are making this very interesting. The West seems like it's separated out a bit.
Yeah.
The East has still got the last 15 or 18 games are going to be teams crawling over each other.
Mm-hmm. All right, those are your headlines. Thank you, Tim Hortons.
Ready to roll? Let's roll.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa. I'm rolling in it.
Play the 60th anniversary edition of Roll Up to Win on the Tim's app today.
Our interviews on Rain Rigs brought to us by Canadian Club Whiskey. We've introduced the first release of the Canadian Club Invitation Series CC 15-year-old Sherry Cask. It's the signature CC Classic 12-year-old whiskey, finished with a secondary aging in Oloroso Sherry Casks. A little bit of trade deadline mop-up here, Ray, and ask Rain Rigs anything. You can send us your questions on X and Instagram at Rain Rigs or on the website rainrigs.com. Corey Elia says, bored looking at cap friendly, and I noticed David Perron signed a contract that allowed him to list three teams that he cannot be traded to. It's the vaunted no trade list. Mm-hmm. I was unaware of that. I didn't know that Perron had three. Normally it's 5, 8, 10, 12, something along mm-hmm. those. Anyway, what locations are most often used on don't send me their lists? And what would the reasons be? I'll lead you on this. And it's gotten more and more prevalent because of dollars, right? A lot of people, a lot of players, Canadian, European, American, don't want to play in Canada. And it's mostly because of taxation issues, right? Everybody wants to play in Florida and the low tax states.
Yeah, I mean that becomes pretty obvious pretty fast. I know when again when I played, we talked about it, but nobody really thought of that. It was more weather than anything else. So you know, like nobody honestly, weather in Winnipeg is a challenge, and so that would be a challenge. I would say the smaller markets would be the ones most prevalent.
Yeah.
On those lists, three teams though. Like, what's the point? How did you negotiate that?
I should have checked it. I'm assuming Corey is correct here. I didn't double check it, but anyway, maybe I mean, like, three teams. I'm not going to. That's it.
Yeah. Three seems like an odd number. It really does.
It does. But you're right. It's mostly related to, sometimes it's just pure family reasons too, right?
Sure.
You know, if you're an older player, you're in a market where you're surrounded by a great support system for a young family. I mean, that's why you negotiate no trades and no moves, right? You leave money on the table in certain situations for that.
Well, and we just saw an example of it at the deadline with Linus Ullmark.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a trade out west and he didn't want to go. He's in a great spot in Boston and he's closer, way closer to home.
Yeah.
And there was some family concerns and he just didn't want to go.
Yeah.
And so the no trade is an interesting thing. A lot of players would like it. I don't think managers should give them out as often as they do. I think they should draw a little bit of a harder line on it.
Yeah.
But everything's a trade-off, right? You're right. They're probably trading off some protection, move protection versus cap hit.
Yeah.
And it's not as easy as it often seems.
No. And give some players credit and their agents credit. They can be very hard-nosed with this, right? If it says 12 teams, well, those are the 12 teams we're not going to, and the agent and the player will adhere. Not always, but they will. They will.
And Dregs, does that, correct me if I'm wrong, I think those lists have to be delivered by July 1st.
Normally, yes. Yeah. Submitted. That's right. And in certain cases, they transfer via trade, and in some cases, they don't. It does get a little bit more complicated.
Of course it does. Yeah. Like, how about just... You got a no trade. Here it is. It's got to be delivered by June 30th.
Yeah.
And it transfers into trade. There you go. Finished.
There you go. Yeah. And don't screw it up or you'll end up like Pierre Dorion.
That turned out to be a pebble in everyone's shoe.
It's a Dadnoff. Yes. Sorry. With the Anaheim Ducks and, of course, the Vegas Golden Knights. All right. Michael Soretsky. How much influence does a draft class of a certain year play on a trade that includes draft picks? Interesting question. Clearly a hockey fan, because it does matter. You know this. It does, right? Mm-hmm. If you look at 2025 and the word out there, we're not draft gurus, but the word is that maybe that first round isn't as deep. And 26 is projecting to be a little bit deeper. Well, maybe you're, you know, I don't want to go down the path of the Vegas Golden Knights. We already gave them all of their flowers on the weekend for the wheeling and the dealing, but they did utilize their 25 first and their 26 first round pick, which they left unprotected, by the way, so the Calgary Flames can maybe take advantage if Vegas slips prior to that 26 draft.
I think that question is such a good question because it will give a glimpse into how everything is interconnected in an organization. So the team wants to improve their NHL team. They're going to make a trade. The team that they're working with wants their first round pick. So then they check with their amateur scouts. Are you guys more in love with the class of this one or that one? And if the amateur scouts direct you to a certain draft year is, hey, we don't think this year's as deep, well, then you're more likely to move it. And then you get into talking to your pro scouts about, okay, they want to offer a prospect. So this prospect versus a draft pick in a draft class that we don't like, which is which? And the complications are many. That's where, in some cases, the analytics department plays a pretty heavy role in trying to determine what those picks are worth. But it definitely does matter. Here's the other thing. If you're trading a first-round pick and at the deadline and you're projected to draft 27th or 28th, what difference does it make? That's every year the picks between 25 and 40 or 25 and 50 are they're all the same.
Yeah.
I mean, they're different, but they're all kind of the same because everybody's draft board's a little bit different. So those picks don't have as much weight as if somebody further up the draft is trading a first.
Right, right. All right, final question. Ask Green Driggs anything to Paul. And I think this more applies to me because you've got a decent, busy March, right? Paul is asking, what are the plans for mail it in March? Which Bob McKenzie, by the way, the pioneer of the trade deadline, invented mail it in March. My mail it in March starts with trying to get healthy and then quickly shifts over to going to Florida for the GM meetings, where I'll be doing almost nothing other than 4 minutes of TV that I have to do every day. That's my mail it in March. That's how
does Holly come down?
Not this time. No, unfortunately, she's going to head back to BC to visit her sister and spend time with family. But normally she would like to. Yeah, it's a nice bit of a break. Florida in March, by the way, is wonderful. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, before it get a little too hot for me, as it June, July, and we may be there in June. Who knows?
You might be. Yeah.
I will say I don't get a mail it in March, but today, after I drop off the kids at school and do a little bit of work, I think I'd probably go to the range.
I was just going to ask, are the golf ranges are open in Vancouver, right? In the area?
I belong to like a smaller course, smaller club. Love it. It's called Seymour Golf. And about 3 years ago, they redid the entire range and they put a roof and heaters. I go in there, I turn the heater on, I drink my coffee until the heater warms up, and then I hit some less than pure 7-irons, which the bottom of my club is screaming for relief. It's like, would you hit one on the face?
Yeah.
But I'll be going to hit some balls, maybe later today.
So you're not a methodical guy in the range. You don't start with your sand wedge and then work your way up, or do you do that if you know you're playing that day as a warm-up?
No, usually my gap wedge is what I start with.
Yeah.
And then if I'm just like today, where I'll just be kind of, you know, trying to get a swing back, I'll just use my 7-iron and try and hit the ball on the face. That's the whole goal today. And then I always finish with a few drivers because they're always
You have to, right? That's
it's not really practicing. No. It's just going out there for enjoy the air.
I see if I get the feel, and this sounds absurd. First club I normally hit, right, is a 4-iron. And if
so you could quit?
No, well, that's part of it. If I flush that thing with my first swing, then I know I'm going to have a decent day.
Okay, time out here. Time out. You use a 4-iron?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Well, I don't have a 3-iron. I've got a hybrid.
No, you shouldn't have a 3-iron. You shouldn't have a 4-iron.
Yeah, I should have a 7-wood. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, it's cheating. It's cheating. It's the rescue. You know who to talk to.
Yes, I do.
And I'm telling you, though,
Mitch on line one.
I said when I was getting my I have a new set of clubs too.
Yeah.
Okay. A couple years ago, I decided. Okay, you know what? I'm going to get some Titleists. So Mitch sets up the fitting. I get there, and so I end up now. I've got 4 woods in my bag. I've got a driver, 3-5, and a rescue.
Nice
7-wood. And I said to the guy, I go, you know what? I'm a little embarrassed with 4 woods in the bag. And he goes, yeah. Wait till you get a 5th one. Pretty soon I'm going to have like 11 head covers in there and a wedge.
When you pair that 7-wood though,
it's the best. Like, you see, get rid of your 4-wood, your 4-iron. Your handicap? What's your handicap?
I'm an 11.
Yeah. You're not good enough. Get rid of it.
Yeah. You're 100% right. You're 100% right. Okay. Well, that's what my mail-in in March looks like. We'll be out on the range here sooner than later. It's like 14, 15 degrees here this week.
Oh, so nice. Nice. There you go. You're getting going.
All right, buddy. Well, all the best. Thanks for tolerating my nonsense here today. And hopefully by Thursday, I sound like a grown man.
Yeah, I hope you feel better. And I get the Abs and Canucks on Wednesday. So Thursday morning, we'll be short sleep, and we'll get at it for Thursday. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good couple of days.
You bet. Thank you to our sponsors who continue to support Ray and Dregs, our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, and Tim Hortons. Until next time, stay safe, everybody.